May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
This is Attention Please, bringing you into contact with the people, places, events, and issues of the North Olympic Peninsula most deserving of your attention today. I'm Steve Evans. This week on Attention Please, we talk with Jamie Machewski, the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of East Jefferson County, and perhaps the person most closely acquainted with the steadily escalating housing crisis in our community. I met with her one recent afternoon in her office above Habitat's iconic store on West Sims Way in Port Townsend. How long have you been Executive Director here?
Almost 16 years.
And how much longer, if any longer, has this Habitat been around?
This Habitat is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. So I came when it was fairly new, but not brand new. It had done quite a bit of work already.
What brought you to this work?
I had been involved in other organizations that relied heavily on the communities that they were located in and the volunteers there to solve really important problems. And then I got the opportunity to be home with my children for a few years and enjoyed that a lot. But when I was ready to start working again outside of my time at home, I was looking at what opportunities there were, and Habitat for Humanity came up as one during that search. And I thought, how much I respect the work that Habitat does by bringing the community together and volunteers and all to solve something that's a really important problem, a really big issue. That attracted me, and so I put my hat in the ring, and I was fortunate to be selected.
Now, for those who don't know, why don't you just briefly outline what Habitat for Humanity is and does.
Sure. Habitat for Humanity began officially in 1976, the year that President Carter began being president. And so he actually didn't start it, but he's the most famous volunteer. A man named Millard Fuller began the Habitat in Georgia, rural Georgia. It grew out of a farm, a collective farm there, that was an experiment in interracial equity, where people were paid equal amounts and they built housing for one another, regardless of race. And they experienced, it was from the 50s, they experienced a lot of discrimination in the community and from people. But that grew value system that said, equity is important, justice is important, housing is important. And Habitat for Humanity formally began in 1976.
Does Habitat still work on issues other than housing?
Habitat for Humanity, our mission is to bring people together to build homes, communities, and hope. So that is an umbrella that says community is really important and people are very important. We build houses primarily, but we also repair and rehabilitate houses. And in the process of it, it's the bringing people together that's so important. One of the things that I just love about Habitat is the bringing people together part of it, because we find that people, when they pick up a hammer next to each other, they can agree about that. They might not agree about anything else. They might not agree about how they vote, about where they go to church or whether they do. They might not agree about much of anything, but they can say, yeah, this is important. I believe that helping my neighbor is important, and I'm willing to pick up a hammer and help. So we find that in a time when people don't find a lot of reasons that they can agree on something, that it's so encouraging for people to get together who wouldn't normally get together and pick up a hammer together. And the hammer, a literal and figurative, because a lot of volunteers do things that don't involve a hammer at all. They help in the Habitat store or on committees or many other ways.
Right. The store here on Sims Way is a well-known community feature here.
Yes.
And one of the things that I
wonder about is how important is that store for the functioning of Habitat, both financially and otherwise?
Yeah, well, I'm curious. I'm just going to ask you, Steve, when you first moved to town, whenever that was the store there at its location yet? Had it been...
Yes, I moved here in 2005, and it was here, and why we bought our dining room table here.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, and was that the first thing you saw of Habitat when you moved to the community, was the Habitat store?
Yes, it was.
I think that answers the question. How important is the Habitat store? It is really important. That is how most people first become aware that Habitat is in this community when they move here. And most people who walk through the door, it's their gateway into Habitat. We have people who become volunteers, who become donors, who might donate furniture, but they might donate money. And that is so important. So as far as the money it raises, it's important. But it's not a large part of Habitat and what the amount of money we raise. It's a significant piece, but it's a more minor piece. The most important part of it is the publicity that it generates and the way that it can engage the community. People can volunteer there who don't want to pick up a hammer, but they're willing to pick up a duster or to pick up a pricing gun and help out.
I see. We'll get later to some of the range of volunteer opportunities,
yeah,
because there's really quite a few, and it does go quite far beyond swinging a hammer, I understand. But yeah, let's talk about what you've seen over the years. So 16 years is a while. And how has the housing scene changed in Port Townsend in the time you've been here?
You know, it's not that long ago that it was possible to buy a house that was affordable for someone who made a moderate income in the community. I mean, I'm going to say even 5 years ago that people still were able to buy a home who had moderate income jobs, education positions, worked for the county, those kinds of things. And since then, it has really changed. And what we're seeing is that the housing prices have become much more out of reach compared to people's income, and that it's become much tighter. Now, with interest rates rising, I expect that that's going to loosen up a little bit. I don't hear as many stories, or maybe any stories in the last 2 months, of people outbidding each other and bidding up the asking price on houses. But I still see an awfully tight market, and in rentals too, that people don't have a lot of options of where to live.
Right. And well, actually, right now, we are going through not just a housing crisis, but an employment crisis, not in terms of lack of opportunities, but way more opportunities than people are able to fill. I mean, maybe you can give me some of the statistics about that. And I know that those two things are related. A lot of people might want to live in Port Townsend, might want to take a job in Port Townsend, but I know, like at the hospital, for instance, they're having real trouble filling positions, and those are often well-paid positions.
That's our understanding, is that the hospital district currently has more than 100 vacant positions, and has had for quite a while, out of 800 positions, and that many of those positions are positions that, as they do pay well, they're able to attract applicants, but when the applicants then investigate housing, they're not able to move here. And I understand it's one of the largest reasons that people leave in the first year of employment at the hospital, is the lack of housing. I also know that what we see with housing, with our vital infrastructure employment. So think about our emergency services employees, people who work in the city police department or the county sheriff department, have always been required to live in the same county where they work. And an exception had to be made some time ago that those people can now live outside of the county. The reason they were required to live in the county was to be accessible to their jobs in an emergency. And they've had to just allow them to live elsewhere which means we as a county are less protected in an event of a serious emergency. Think about an emergency that would cut us off from communication, that would maybe take out the Hood Canal Bridge or something like that. What are we going to do with our vital infrastructure employees if they can't live here? I hear other employers who are having a very difficult time filling positions. I hear that with some of the nonprofits that run schools, adult schools, for a year at a time or 9 months at a time, that is affecting their student population, not being able to house them. So the impacts ripple through our community, and it is not simply a matter of people who have very low incomes who can't afford housing. When we don't have housing to house the people who live here, period, we're going to have trouble. It's going to start causing all of us more pain in what we can get done and what we how self-reliant we can be as a county, as a community.
Another example that comes to my mind has to do with basic city services. We recently lost our household hazardous waste materials site for lack of an employee. Jack Mingo, who ran that for years, retired, and they could not find a replacement. And I understand that the city, the county also are really suffering for basic public works kinds of employees and so on. So we've established, I think, that we have, a kind of a dire need for housing in the community, and Habitat has been here for years helping provide that to needy clients. So let's talk a little bit about how somebody qualifies to get Habitat's help with housing, and how the demand that you've seen has changed recently and how you're dealing with that.
To qualify for housing, people need to have a modest income that's reliable, to be able to repay a mortgage that's affordable. They need to have reasonable credit. A demonstrated ability to repay a mortgage is important. And they need to be willing to work to help us build their house. That doesn't mean people actually physically must work on the house. There are some people who apply for Habitat homes who their own bodies don't allow them to do that kind of work. And we do other kinds of sweat equity in that situation, perhaps working in the store, for example. We did an application. Our last application cycle was almost a year ago. We selected 12 new households to become Habitat homeowners last summer. And those are all working. The very first one, we just dedicated their house. We will be dedicating another 7 homes over the next 5 to 6 months and housing quite a few people for that. The rest of those houses are getting, they're in the works, they're getting built. And so what else did you just ask me? You wanted to know about people and how they qualify.
I'm sure there's lots of our listeners out there who would like to know how do I get in the loop.
Yeah. Okay. So we will have an application cycle opening up in February for 7 one-bedroom homes, attached homes that are near Discovery View and near Avamere in Port Townsend. Really lovely little community. It will be important that people want to be in a small community, but they're small little homes designed by a pretty famous architect, Ross Chapin, who does some cottage housing and is known across the U.S. So we're very excited about that. That obviously won't work with children in the households. Those will be for 1 or 2 adult households since they're one-bedroom homes and cottage-size houses. We will be doing another application cycle within a few months for other housing that's for households with of multiple sizes. We always build homes based on the size of the household. And we would welcome people to get information about how to become a Habitat homeowner. You can go on our website, Habitat.com. EJC, like East Jefferson County, .org, and search and find out how to get a home. And we have orientations happening, Zoom orientations happening every week, and people can learn more about it. And once you sign up and do one of those orientations, you're on a list to be notified as soon as there are openings that come up. I also should mention that Habitat applicants are a really wide variety. We don't just house a certain kind of person or a certain kind of household. Our homeowner partners tend to look like this community. So a very wide variety of ages and of household sizes, both with children and without children. One adult, two adult. We welcome people to apply, and we have a very strong non-discrimination policy so that people who would think maybe they don't qualify ought to try.
I assume, though, that need is a qualifier.
Yeah, so one of the qualifications is that someone needs housing. That doesn't mean you aren't housed now. You probably are housed, but it's not housing that's meeting your need. Maybe it's in poor condition. Maybe it's way too expensive. Maybe it's too small. Maybe it's not adapted for a family member who has a disability. It's housing that you aren't able to solve your housing situation on the income you make. And we do have some specific income guidelines. It's really tied to the size of the household. And so I can't just tell you right off what that is. And really going through the application is important to determine if you would qualify. But there is some more information on our website, and our homeowner services manager who does the orientations on Zoom can also answer questions about that.
So what kind of limitations or stipulations are put on ownership of a Habitat house to assure that that housing remains as affordable housing going into the future?
Great question, Steve. We have just changed our model. We've moved to a new model of to keep homes affordable in the future. It's kind of a pay it forward model. It's called permanent affordability, where when we sell the house, we sell the home, but we don't sell the land that the house sits on. Instead, we lease that land. It feels like your own land because it's a 99-year ground lease. It's renewable. It's inheritable. You have the exclusive use of your property. But by us not selling the ground, the land under the house, we can control how much the house appreciates in the future. So, in exchange for getting a very affordable home up front, somebody agrees in the future when they sell the house that they will sell it for an affordable amount to the next buyer. And that is a legal mechanism. It's known often as a community land trust, and we have a community land trust in the community. Some people will be familiar with Olympic Housing Trust. We are a different organization than that, but it is a very similar mechanism, and it's throughout the United States. It's a legal mechanism that certainly allows the buyer appreciation and the ability to gain equity in their house, but it makes sure that the next household will also be able to afford to live there, so that this tremendous and generous contribution of the community to make sure houses are built, it stays affordable, it stays available for the next household.
And how is that defined? I mean, is it defined as a certain percentage of like median prices in an area at the sale point? Or, I mean, how do you actually define affordable?
Yeah, we have a really careful process of pricing the house right up front. We look at a house and make sure that that house would be affordable to somebody in the income range that Habitat serves. And then we set the appreciation for the future at a certain percentage each year so that someone will be able to predict and know what their future selling price is.
Is that percentage linked to an index like inflation or?
Yeah, that's a great question. We did a lot of study about what that increase should be, and we looked at formulas where it's linked to something like inflation or consumer price index or something like that. We ended up selecting a much simpler model. We looked back 20 years to see what the area median income had done over 20 years, and we tracked it. And we found that 1.5% simple interest every year would about track with how much the incomes have gone up in our community over time. So that's our formula. People who buy a house at a certain amount should expect that they will get 1.5% appreciation each year, plus whatever they've paid into the house to pay their principal on their mortgage, they also will get that back. And when you rent, you don't get anything back, of course.
Right. So let's talk very briefly about the relationship of Habitat of East Jefferson County to Habitat for Humanity National.
Sure. Habitat for Humanity International is still headquartered in Georgia. There are Habitat affiliates in 1,100 communities across the country and in many countries outside of the U.S. as well. We have certain things that we need to abide by as a Habitat for Humanity affiliate that were expected. For example, they expect that we do home ownership and not rental. And that sets an agreement that many people have asked us about, why doesn't Habitat rent homes? And that's why. They also have expectations about how we make sure that we are doing a good job serving people of color. We have an initiative right now called Advancing Black Home Ownership that's important in this community for us to address previous inequities. And so we're working at that. We have an expectation from our international organization that we support the work of Habitat elsewhere in the world. So that's a really fun part of our work, actually, where we are expected to tithe or send a tenth of the contributions that we receive to a sister organization, a sister habitat somewhere else. As a result, this little Habitat affiliate, through the generosity of people locally, has built more than 80 homes at this point in other parts of the world.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. I'd like to talk to you some about this project that I heard about in Port Hadlock. It's a kind of exciting development, and there's some questions related to that, to what we were just talking about with like partnerships that you may enter into to help build out that, 17 acre?
17 acres. So exciting. Some community members came to us about a year ago and said, we think you should look at this property that's on the market. So we did a lot of work. We did a lot of looking at it. Some people will know that story. The sewer that is not currently in Port Hadlock, but is scheduled to come in, it should be starting construction this year, will be available, and that sewer will allow us to build upwards of 150 or so homes there, which is a pretty exciting project and prospect. We will be building not just Habitat homes there for lower income households, but private developers will also partner in this project to build homes that will meet more moderate income guidelines. So people who are teachers and who work in the sheriff's department and people who are nurses and so on will be able to afford housing there too, with the same kind of restrictions that they agree to pay it forward and keep their home price affordable for the next person who buys it. So it's a very exciting project, and we just can't wait to see it happening. We're actually kind of testing many parts of that project right now. Some people will have seen the homes we're building on Landis Street, where we're building our first shared wall construction, duplex style homes. We call them paired homes. And we expect that the Port Hadlock property will also have some multifamily housing, not just single family. For those who don't know, that property is right behind the Jefferson County Library and the Chimacum Creek Primary School. So it's this beautiful location where kids will be able to walk to school, and we envision a community that will be something where people love to walk. There should be green spaces in it. The design will be unfolding over the next year, and we'll be having more community meetings. We'd really love people to go on our website and learn about those community meetings. Would welcome them to participate and be part of helping us figure out how to have a community that fits the neighborhood in Port Hadlock really well.
So all of the units that are built there would also be under that same guidance from Habitat International that there shall be no rental units there?
We have gotten a waiver from Habitat International on this project, and there will be rental availability there. We don't know how much. We will not be running that. We will own the property, but someone else will need to build that rental if there are maybe some small apartments, something like that, and manage it. Perhaps there will be a business or an entity that is interested in that and maybe would like to do some housing for employees, for example. All of those things are possibilities. Partnership's going to be so important to this. This is a project way bigger than anything we've ever even dreamed of, and it's going to take a lot of lifting to get there. So we're looking for partners and would love to share more about this. If someone's group wants to hear more about this, we'd be happy to come, listen, share what we're up to, and gather that information. This is, 2023 is a year for us to be fleshing this project out and seeing what it might look like, doing a lot more listening, getting input.
Do you have any partners established that you can name now?
I would say that we are working and talking with nonprofit organizations and businesses and governmental organizations, all of those, and none is like signed on the line, but I'm really pleased that they're moving along, and we've had some wonderful conversations with organizations that are really excited about the possibilities.
So let's get back to the question of what kinds of volunteer opportunities there are. You were saying earlier that in order to get sweat equity, you don't need to actually be swinging a hammer or pouring concrete into molds or anything like that. So what kinds of things, other sorts of things, might people do?
Yeah, I want to start by saying Habitat would not be Habitat without people. And we need people. This is a big lift to do as much growth and as many homes as we are doing, and as many as we want to do and feel that the community is asking us to do. So we need people. And there are many roles. I think that we can't even say all the roles. As people come to us and say, these are my skills, we can go, oh my gosh, that would be perfect to do. Could you do this? And we've had some really remarkable things happen as a result, and people who can help us. But I'll just say that in doubling the size of an organization, we need people not just who can frame a house, which we do need. We really need that. We need groups who are willing to come out and help build. But we need people who understand things like finance and how we increase our model to be able to manage this much construction work. So people who've done planning, people who have raised money, people who are interested in how businesses grow. Our board of directors will be growing again and looking at people who have some critical skill sets, very strategic thinking kind of people. And we have committees that need people on them. So there are lots of ways people are involved. We have people who work in our office as volunteers, who help with bookkeeping as volunteers. We just have all kinds of needs, and no place that I feel like we could say no to right now. We need your help.
With Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Jamie Maciejewski, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News.